want to have a good progress in our maybe our meditation or our walking the path in the Eightfold Path, we must have got very little doubts. And the teachers are there to clear your doubts for you. You need to clear your doubts. Now, there are many, many things that we were taught. And then there are even more things recorded. And of course, now you come to the modern days, there's endless things. Everybody can say anything and say there is Buddhism. Right? So what do you call Buddhism? Are you clear about what actually Buddhism is or not? So you go back, okay, what is Buddhism then? If you know that it's a teaching given by the Buddha and all this, right? And then there's a Dharma, and then you know, okay, everybody talks about Buddhism, there's Sayana, Theravada, and all this. But are we clear as to what Mahayana is? Are we clear what this Theravada is? Right? And sometimes you think that Theravada is the right way, sometimes you think that Mahayana is the right way. But unfortunately, we are not certain. This is actually following, going back, and this is actually what the Buddha has taught.
And I got a question. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Okay, so I was wondering about, so usually we talk about Mahayana and Theravada.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering, what are your thoughts on Vajrayana?
Vajrayana? Mm. You know, actually, Vajrayana is an offshoot of Mahayana.
Pardon?
It's an offshoot of Mahayana.
Okay.
A section of Mahayana. But
right.
Nowadays, you know, people talk about Tibetan Buddhism and all this. So they try to make Vajrayana so special. Traditionally, it's one of the schools of the Mahayana Buddhism.
Right.
Yeah.
Because to me, I recently came across a temple that practiced Vajrayana Buddhism. Uh-huh. And with the meditation sessions, I think they do things like envisioning deities.
Yeah,
so I'm just, to me, that sounds very mystical. It doesn't sound as practical as the Buddhism I know. So I'm just wondering, like, your thoughts on that, like, because I was a bit hesitant to go just because I wasn't sure what it would be like. So
you see, the thing is, you got to know where Vajrayana came from, right? So Buddhism existed for quite a while, and then slowly they start to have divisions.
Right?
So everybody has got their own school of thoughts, and initially they are all very similar. But then slowly, as the time goes on, over hundreds of years, it gets wider and wider, the difference. Right? And because Buddhism happens in India, there's a lot of local Indian tradition, or local Indian beliefs and religion contributed in. So that's why they start to have this, to divide to this Vajrayana. Right? In Vajrayana, they place importance not only on meditation, but on using chanting, you know, this mantra, and then they use the mudra, you know, the hands moving around and all this. So that comes from the Indian practices. The Buddha never teaches mudra and chanting. But the chanting actually happens with a lot of other schools as well. So you look at the Theravadin Buddhism, you look at the Thai temple, you look at the Buddhist temple, they'll be chanting. So the chanting actually is not what the Buddha taught us to do. If you look into the books, the scripture, the Buddha taught us to prepare the mind, how to train our mind up. So, but because there are other interests coming in, and people think that is very nice to do, so they do it. And then that involves a lot of things like, you know, chanting. And chanting slowly became a magic spell, magic formula. Right? Now, originally, the chanting is for us to remember the teachings of the Buddha. So, are you familiar with the chanting?
Pardon?
Are you familiar with the chanting?
Oh, I'm familiar with Mahayana chanting. Well, sort of familiar. Like, I can't memorize anything, but.
If you look at the Theravadin chants, they are all about the teachings of the Buddha.
Mm.
The Mangala Sutta, the Ratana Sutta, and the Metta Sutta, they are all teaching the Buddha to bring up your metta and tell you, you know, which is good, the blessings, and all this. Right? So that is originally that is meant for us to practice, to strengthen our practice, remind us of the teachings all the time.
Mm.
But really, after all these things, then because of the influence of the animistic people or the people who have the trees and all this, so they became magic formula. So we say, okay, if you want to have a peaceful house, then we chant this for you. Right? So, and if the place is haunted, they think, oh, there are a lot of petas and all these ghosts hanging around. So they do the chanting, they sort of make the ghost calm and peaceful, and they don't come and disturb you. And then later it becomes a tool for you to chase away all the ghosts and devils, to purify your house. So it becomes like that. And very common in the Indian practices. During the Buddhist time, there were already things like that happening. The priests, we call Brahmins, they actually do the sort of things.
Mm.
There is a book which is very ancient, before the time of the Buddha in India. They call it one of the leaders to teach all these things, magic spells.
Right.
So when you do things, be a ritual, like, so say, supposing you're sick, they don't see a doctor, they go and see a priest. And then the priest will give you all those things, do all those things, you know, maybe take a plate and then put some incense, put some flowers, and then if you are sick of this, okay, these are the things you need. So they take the thing and spray, and then they chant certain things, and they hope that you get better. And so this sort of things is
cultural.
In human beings, because we want it. What happened? Ah, sorry, something went wrong. So as we go, as it goes on, the ritual become more and more elaborate. Yeah? So it becomes, you know, that's why you see in the Vajrayana temple, or even some of the Mahayana temple, the altar is all the full of fruits, full of things. And then the images there, all the statues of Buddha become sacred. You cannot simply touch them, you cannot dirty them and all these things. Yeah? So it becomes a taboo to do something wrong to the statues. That's the reason that emphasizes that so much. Yeah. So, and then eventually in a lot of Buddhist school, they start to get believing more and more those gods and all these things, local things. Right? And in Mahayana Buddhism, a lot of them later became what we call our Bodhisattvas, our Rakshas and all this. Hmm? So have you seen the four divine gods in the temple? Fierce-looking things, four of them. They are called the heavenly guardians or heavenly kings. One west, then one fellow holding a pagoda, one fellow holding a pipa, and one fellow holding a sword, and one fellow holding an umbrella. Yeah? Those are not Buddhists initially. They are just Indian gods. Yeah? So we put them into Buddhism and then convert them. I don't know how they convert them, but they convert them, and they became the guardians of Buddhism. Yeah? And in the Mahayana temple, a Chinese temple especially, you got a young man in a Chinese warrior's costume, and there's Buddha. So he is also the guardian of Buddhism. So they make a story of him back now. He was there to take care of the Bodhisattva Avalokiteshvara, Pani. And so on and so on. So they make stories out of it, and then they start to believe. And then when they start to believe, then we go into all these rituals. Right? Now, I'm not saying the rituals are wrong, but I'm saying that if you do only the rituals and forgot to train your mind, then what is Buddhism? Isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. So you got to always remember that Buddhism is about training our mind, our body, our actions and all these things. And all these rituals can come in if we want to.
Mm.
Okay. So not the ritual first, always train your mind first.
Mm.
Yeah, but when your mind is well trained, then you don't worry about rituals anymore.
Yeah, I was also wondering, I think I heard about how there were different realms in Buddhism. Like there's the human realm and then the
animal.
Oh yeah, can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. Actually, this sort of thing already existed before the time of the Buddha.
Mm.
They believe that there are things which are higher than human beings, more powerful than human beings. Right? And things which are more powerful than human beings, there are two kinds. One is the good ones, and the other one are the bad ones. The good gods and the bad gods. Right? So the good gods, they call them the Deva. Right? And then the bad, you know, in Indonesia, Deva means gods, isn't it? In Malay, Deva means God. Deva. Right? And then they got the bad ones. This we call them the Asuras. Right? So, but both are very powerful. Right? And traditionally, the Indian story tells you that the Devas and the Asuras are always fighting. And sometimes the Deva wins, sometimes the Asura wins. Right? So, in the Theravada, even in the Theravada scripture, there were stories like that. Because, you know, today the Deva won. The next day, the Asuras won. Right? And that, you know what it means by that? It means the Deva, you got the Deva in our heart, isn't it?
In our what?
In our heart. Sometimes you are like Deva, sometimes you are like Asura. Right? I'll elaborate on it later. So these are the things. Then they also got, they talked about this realm of human beings. But they call it Manusia, that's us, Manusia. Right? So we are human beings, and we know what human beings are. We have got our defilements, we have also got the ability to train ourselves so that we achieve enlightenment. Right? So human beings, we have got all this, right? The funny things about human beings, we got angry, we got upset and all this. But at the same time, we got all this ability to be kind to people, to be generous to people, and all those we do, right? But it's only when we start to allow this bad part of us, that is the part where we hold on to the greed and hatred, to overcome the part that we can do good, better we can do this. So, you know, like, we want to do something good, but sometimes this one tells you, why should we do all this? Let other people do. So that is the thing. Yeah? We allow our bad part to overtake us. So this is the nature of a human being. Now, just below human beings, we have got what we call the animal realm. Animal realm. Yeah? And you know, the animals, they got less chance of controlling themselves, controlling the atmosphere and all this, yeah? Controlling the surrounding. Like human beings, we can control our surrounding. We can grow crops. We can invent things and so on, right? So we are more comfortable than the animals. Animals depends very much on the natural environment, right? And they got. And the very important part of the animal is they are only driven by desire. Right? Whereas human beings, sometimes we are driven by desire, but the ability to say, okay, I control myself. But animals, when they're driven by desire, they can no control. Okay? Now, then below the animals, we call it the peta, hungry ghost. Yeah? Now, if you see the Chinese and Tibetan painting, the hungry ghost is always depicted by those short things, and then with a big tummy, and then the mouth is like a what do you call it? Very, you know, a small hole. And it seems, you know, they tell us more and more stories. They tell us that whenever they try to get near food, the mouth cannot take in because the mouth is so hot that the food got burnt. Yeah? The food got burnt. Then you want to eat, imagine your mouth, before you open and bite the thing, the breath comes out, you burn the food.
Yeah?
Uh-huh. stories. These are all stories. So these people are always hiding. That's why they call it the hungry ghost. And for Chinese, you got a hungry ghost festival. In the 7 million, you go to places where they are Chinese, especially Malaysia and Singapore, you got this 7 million where they do first, they think to feed the hungry ghost. Because we invented the story to say that in the 17th in the Chinese calendar, the hungry ghost opened up the mouth to eat. Yeah? So the stories are stories, very nice stories, but try not to, not be attached too much to them. So this hungry ghost forever had got this desire, yeah? Unsatisfied, that we cannot satisfy them. Yeah? So they just repeat greediness. And then below the hungry ghost is this hell. Yeah? Hell. Neraka. Yeah? We call it Neraka, the same thing in Malay as well. Yeah? So this hell is where those people really suffer. Yeah? And then in the early Buddhism, they got this hell which is a cold hell, and hell which is a hot hell. Yeah? And when it goes to China, the Chinese, you know, extend the hell. If you have 3 hells, become 18 hells. Yeah? And then you go one hell, you've got this very hot pillar, and then the devil's making you cut the pillar. And then you want to cut off the tongue, you paralyze. The other one, they put it into the boiling oil to fry and all this. Yeah? And then you hear the torture and you feel the torture in it. So these are the 6 worlds. Now, if you look at it, hell, see, we are in the 6 days a lot of times. Right? How do you feel when you're in the 6 days? Supposing you are very, you know, very greedy, full of greed. Then you are born as the mind is born as a angry ghost. And then you do something really bad and you feel it, then you are born in hell. Isn't it? And when you are doing something really good, then you are born as a deva, the heavens. Now, supposing you are very powerful and you try to make life difficult for people, you got so you have control of the whole universe, and then you start to make a lot of difficult rules for people to follow, make life difficult for others, then you are born as an asura. You are powerful, but cruel, right? And not needy. But if you are not a human being, which most of us are, then we are like that. So, in other words, you look at it, these 6 realms is actually not out of, not, you don't have to wait until you die to be born into one of these realms. Right? Supposing the next moment you are angry at somebody, really angry, then when you're angry, what happens? Your body, you feel the heat, isn't it? That's hot air you are in. Yeah. So for us, when we are practicing, when these sort of things happen, we got to know that when I'm suffering, it's because of my greediness. I'm now reborn as a hungry ghost. Yeah. Although I'm still a human form, but up here, I'm a hungry ghost, up in your mind. Yeah. So this is the 6 realms. Yeah. But we can look at 6 realms in a superstitious way. Okay. This life, you do something bad, next life, you are born as something else. Yeah? But a real reborn birth in the 6th realm is one moment to another moment. Yeah? In this moment, you do something which is really good to help your friends. How do you feel? You feel happy. Then you are born in the heaven. Yeah? So I can teach you how to go to heaven every moment, do something good all the time, and you'll be heaven all the time. Isn't it? So we are not saying that the 6 realm story is not true. But when they talk about you until you die, then you don't know something else, that might not be true. Because there are so many things we do, and for everything we do, we wait until we die to get the result and be reborn. How many millions of times can be reborn? So if you look at it as the moment to moment, right? Supposing you queue up in a shop, right? We buy something, right? And you see something you like, for example, like fried prawns, right? And then the fellow keep on selling, everybody comes and buy the thing. Then you like fried prawns, and you go to the takeaway shop and you want to buy fried prawns. Now you've got another five people in front of you, but there are only four prawns left. So what the hell do you think? Don't buy. I want to buy some. But move them, you are reborn as an unbeliever. So this is what it is. The six names is really is real. If you look at it this way, you can prove to yourself. Now, if the six real story will tell you that the Buddha is out of this.
Is what?
The Buddha is not included in the six realms. Why? It's because the Buddha's mind is different from ours. The Buddha has got no more attachment. That's why he's out of this. And therefore, he can come and teach us the way to get out of this. And that six realms represents what we call samsara, right? The bitter sea of existence. Right? In Mahayana, we call the bitter sea of existence. So that is what it is. It's very simple teaching. As long as we get rid of the superstitious things which we put in and the stories and all these things, you'll understand it a lot better. Isn't it?
Yeah.
So now, then, tomorrow, if you start to get very angry at somebody, look at yourself. What hell are you doing? Are you in the hot hell or are you in the cold hell? Yeah. And then you are very nice to somebody, do something good to help others. Then look at it, which heaven you are in. And you can make a choice for yourself. You want to go to heaven or you want to go to hell? So did I answer your question? Did I answer your question?
Sorry, can't really hear.
Did I answer your question or not?
Oh, yes, answered my question. Yes, sorry.
Okay, so, and that's, in fact, a lot of Buddhist practice teaches us how to get out of it. Now, have you heard about metta practices? Metta. Yeah? Oh, they are loving kindness. Now, this loving kindness will lead us out of this as well. When you are kind to people and you give your feelings, your love, and everything to people, others, even to your animal, then you are practicing loving kindness. Yeah? Then you are, at the moment, you are not affected by any of the six. You are no longer a human being. You are not a deva. You are not a asura. Neither are you an animal or things in hell. You are out of this. Okay? So you can experience that. But you want to experience something which is much more simpler, which you know you can feel always. It's been good for others. When you do something good, help people, then you'll be all right. You should be all right. Hello? Come here. I lost everything. Just now, any of them came out.
Huh?
How do you put it back?
Can you repeat that? We can't hear you clearly.
Just a minute. I got to get Ellen to come and put me back.
Okay.
We've lost you. Hold on. What's happened? I don't know. I just press this place and then it's gone. Then we're okay.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear?
Yeah.
Olivia, can you hear me?
Yeah, okay. Yes, we can hear you.
Okay. So I've answered one question already. Look, have another to answer one question. If I were Thai man, I take 2 hours to answer one question. Any others?
There's actually another question that was submitted from the social media. So the question is, what should we tell ourselves when we are blaming ourselves for doing something wrong?
What's that?
When we are blaming ourselves from doing something wrong?
No, I can't get you because the voice is not really good. Okay, again.
So the question is, what should we tell ourselves
when we are blaming ourselves for doing something.
No, there's echo in it. I can't hear very well. Can you type it out and put on the screen for me?
Okay, so can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
So the question is, what should we tell ourselves when we are blaming ourselves for doing something wrong?
Now, the commonest thing for us to do is when we do something wrong, and we know that this is wrong, we always blame ourselves, doesn't it? Yeah? You say, you feel guilty about it, if you know that you're wrong. And when you feel guilty, you are actually suffering. Yeah? Now, sometimes when we suffer, we want others to suffer. Yeah? So when we want others to suffer, what we do, we have an outburst. Then we find fault with other people. So that is not the right way to do. Now, in the teachings of the Buddha, you got to remember, when you do something wrong, it is normal for you to do something wrong. Normal. Because you are a human being. Understand? Yeah? When you are a human being, you are always doing something wrong. But the most important part of it is, know that you are doing something wrong, which you have done, then start to go and investigate why you did something wrong. Now, can you do the investigation or not? How do you go around doing the investigation? Now, you got to be fair to everything. When something happens, say, for example, your friend did something and you yell at a friend. Okay? We do it very often this way, isn't it? Give me an example of when you know you do something wrong. When you are, maybe when you want to wait, you wait for a bus. Yeah? You wait for a bus, usually you line up. Yeah? But this time you forgot to line up and the people have got to the bus. Okay? It's a small thing. But it's still something not right. So what you got to do is, you know that I've already done that. So what do we do? When you go up the bus, know that you have done this thing, and apologize to other people, isn't it? Apologize for the time, I say, sorry, I forgot to line up. And then you feel a lot better. So when you do something wrong, always redress the thing. Do something to help improve the situation rather than do something to make the situation worse. Right? So supposing your friend offended you and you start to yell back at that person. Now, after all, why do you feel offended? It's because your mind there, you got this hatred in your mind. You don't like what the fellow tell you. And therefore, you're offended and therefore, you get angry. Now, when you know that you're doing that, you see how much suffering you get. So this is the way we look at it. Understand what happens. And then do something to help the situation rather to make the situation worse. So if you have done, you say so your friend has said something and you get upset with the person, you insulted the friend, then it's good to say, I'm sorry. After all, I'm sorry, three words is very simple, isn't it? But what makes us try not to say it is because our pride. In Buddhism, again, when you do your meditation, the teachers will start to teach you where this pride comes from. Now, do you know where the pride comes from? It comes from your ego. I think of myself, I'm a very nice person, I'm very good and all this. So sometimes we got to, if we are really in the wrong, or we have done something really wrong, it's good to be able to say that I've done something wrong to the person whom we have done something wrong to. So in English, we call it apologize. But don't overdo it. Say that I'm sorry. I'm sorry to cause you a lot of problems. That's all what you need. Okay?
The audio is really good now compared to just now.
Yes, yes. What? Very true.
I just about to send the message to say it's clear now.
Yeah, the audio is really good.
Yeah, it's good.
All right.
So there's a follow-up question to that. The question just now. What if the situation is when I realize that I was not mindful enough and I blame myself?
Well, when you're not mindful enough, that's why we got to talk about training in mindfulness. How often we train ourselves in mindfulness? How often? Now, the Buddha says the only way, there's a way of training your mindfulness. You can train your mindfulness when you sit down quietly and look into what happens in your mind. That is what we call sitting meditation. But at the same time, you can train your mindfulness when you're moving as well. Right? When you're doing something, always be mindful. Mindful of what is happening in your mind. Supposing when you walk to the bus stand, are you really mindful about walking to the bus stand or not? When we walk, looking at left, right, and all these things, making opinions about this person, that person, decision, that situation. Right? And sometimes, even if we don't think of things surrounding us, our mind will be away somewhere. Right? Sometimes, you'll be away, say, possibly in Colombo, possibly in England, possibly in your hometown. Right? You think of those things. So, the training of mindfulness is to be able to bring your mindfulness back to what you are doing at that particular moment. Now, if we are not mindful in doing things or totally not mindful at all, you will commit a lot of mistakes. And that's why for a lot of us, accidents happen. We do a lot of things and then accidents happen. Now, supposing you are not mindful about cutting, when you are cutting vegetables. You're going very fast and not mindful, chances are you cut your finger. And then if you are not mindful, especially when you got something burning in your, say you're boiling a soup or something and it boils over. Right? Now, that usually we lose our mindfulness that way. You panic. When you panic, you got no mindfulness. And then you do things, then you hurt yourself, you make the things worse. So we got to train ourselves before things happen. So every time we got to train ourselves to be mindful. From you can start, if you're not used to, you can start on very, very simple things. That things like when you brush your teeth, or things like when you are opening a door, you're walking up the steps. Are you really walking up the steps at the time, or is your mind elsewhere? So we've got to train ourselves. When you forget to be mindful, bring your mindfulness back into what you are doing. Going back, when you brush your teeth, you know that you're thinking of something else, bring it back to brushing your teeth. Right? And the result is you get cleaner teeth. Right? So when you are able to do all these things, then there are very few times when you are not mindful. But when you're actually sometimes when you slip, then you know that I'm not mindful. Well, what happens? Don't get upset with it either. I'll be more mindful next time. And that's all you do. Is it very simple or not? So the teaching of the Buddha actually is extremely simple. We don't have to go and do all these so many things. It's just there are no, you don't even have to have a lot of theory and philosophy about it. It's just to be with yourself all the time. When you go to lectures, how often does your mind wander? Have you ever experienced not when the lecturer is very boring and very dull? Right? You go there, you sit down with your note, your pen and everything. Your mind does what he says, you're not paying attention. Because why? You're getting upset with him because he's boring. Right? I say boring, boring, boring. And then when your mind is occupied with the words boring, you don't listen to him anymore. Right? So that's why we train ourselves to be able to, even if though it's boring, whether it's monotonous or whatever, you can still do it. Train yourself. And that training is what we call patience and energy. Patience in Pali is called Kanti. Energy in Pali is called Virya. These are the two things. And then if you start to do it very often, you find that it becomes natural. You're no longer forcing yourself to do all these things. Your mindfulness is no longer something which you got to really force yourself to do it. It becomes natural. And that is what we call our Buddhist training. So you see, your religion is very, very simple. You don't have to do all these funny things like praying too much and all this. You can pray, but don't have to go around doing every 2 seconds. Okay, does that answer the question about what you do when you're not mindful? Just know that I wasn't mindful. And then I'll be more mindful the next time.
Just a question here. What if I'm mindful that I have some sort of probably desire or want, maybe just say wanting to eat a lot of junk food. I know I'm mindful about it, but I acknowledge it, but I still want to eat it. So it's I feel like probably, for example, probably stress right now with the exams and stuff, and I'm I probably can give myself a cheat day or anything to eat junk food. Mm. I'm mindful and then still gonna eat it. So what are your thoughts on this?
There are two ways. One is to do it the traditional hard way. Stop yourself from eating. Right? Now, on the other hand, we can train ourselves to be gentle with ourselves. Don't be too hard on yourself. Know that every time you want to eat the junk food, I'm eating junk food. Right? And then when you start to see that the junk food is useless, then you see that's the result of me eating junk food. You are teaching yourself slowly. Right? So it's up to you to follow. In the traditional Buddhist way, if you look at some of the Mahayanis, they are very strict with themselves. I'm not going to do it. Then they torture themselves and then they start to think of junk food and they start to get upset and all this. After a while, it go away, but you still do not pull everything out. You still have got a desire for junk food. The moment you lose your, what you call that, defense against taking junk food, you eat like anything. Whereas you follow the other way, the slow way, and educate yourself. This is junk food I'm eating. I know and I shouldn't be eating, but I'm eating now. Just eat. Then tell yourself, okay, I eat, but I eat a bit less of it. Right? I won't eat so much.
Cool. Have a rat, have a Kit Kat.
Yeah. So slowly, you are teaching yourself. Right? And that is a better way, I think. Right? Now, no point forcing yourself, because if you force yourself, you eventually lose your control.
But if you know
that you're eating junk food, I eat a bit less. Supposing you always go for one whole bar of chocolate. You say, okay, now I'm eating 3/4 bar of chocolate. And that's enough. Right? Supposing if you want to eat a whole packet of chips, eat half a packet of chips. Right? And then slowly, the next time you want, eat a bit less than half a packet. Then eat a quarter packet. And slowly, you find that very slowly, your habit will go away. Now, it's no point telling yourself, I'm not going to eat chips, because you will go mad if you think of chips. So we don't think that the Buddhists must be very strict with ourselves. We have got the opportunity to educate ourselves. Know that the things are no good and I'm eating it. And then slowly you learn how to get rid of it. And you need to have a lot of patience in doing so. You got to be very patient with yourself. It's not one day, it's not 2 days. It's a whole life of practice. Okay, does that answer your question?
Cool. Yes, that's very, very useful. And that definitely answers my questions. Next time I have Kit Kat, I'll probably share it half for the others and the other half for myself.
Yeah. Don't throw it away.
Yeah, don't throw it away. Share it with someone else. Yeah.
Now, this is what I would recommend people when they want to give up cigarettes. Ah. Your addiction to junk food is not like addiction to cigarettes. When you want to stop smoking, I say, well, I can go cold turkey, but that's very, very difficult. You want to go, okay, today I'm cutting down. I'm smoking only half of what I should smoke. Slowly. But you got to be patient. You got to have the energy. And got to really persevere. Right? Got to stay with it and say, I make up a resolution, I'm going to follow it. Right? And don't try to be too hard with yourself. The Buddha never say to go and commit suicide. Okay?
Thank you so much.
Okay. Any next question?
I think we've got more question. No?
I think, Olivia, next time when I do Dharma talk in in Unibats, you tell them this is a question and answer and discussion session.
I've already asked in social media and like some people would reply, but I think we've covered everything. Well, if no one has any question, I'm going to ask one. So, because of the COVID cases that has been increasing lately, right? And like now people are fearing that another lockdown might happen. Mm. And like, because we felt like we've experienced like this brief freedom, like in between the lockdown. And now like thinking of another lockdown, some people might think that, oh no, another lockdown, I can't be confined inside. Like, what are your thoughts on like this kind of an opinion? And like, them wanting to go out.
Mm-hmm. So, what's that?
Sorry?
Ready, got more questions?
Can you? Can't you hear me?
I think Olivia's asking, what are your thoughts on people wanting to go out despite the second wave for like COVID-19, the restrictions that have been introduced and then will be implemented midnight today?
Yep. Thanks, Mabel.
So you said you want to go out, okay? But then they stopped going out. Now, with this COVID, how do you all feel when you cannot go out? Boring, isn't it?
I think probably a little bit troublesome. Like, maybe we have, like, events or, like, something planned. And then, yeah, we just have to change it.
Well, you know why we want to go out or not? We make it a habit. We make it a habit. What do you need to go out of the house for? You go to attend lectures, okay? Or go and buy things. But sometimes you want to go out because you want to entertain ourselves. You go out with friends. Then when you go out with friends, what do? Gossip. So what you miss is not actually the going out. The missing is the company which you keep. So, but then you can see, why do we want to gossip so much? Can you make use of the time when you are not going out for something very useful or not? Can you think how many useful things you can do for yourself? Now, if you look at the point of Buddhism, we got to spend our time doing a lot of activities. Right? The activities means for ourselves, for our family, and then for our friends. But the extra time, we got to go back to ourselves. Train our mind up. That means we got to have times when we develop, go and sit down for meditation and all these things. But normally, do you allow time for you to do your meditation or not? We don't. So what happens is, when you cannot go out, then why not you use this time to do for your training? Now, you can sit down if you cannot sit. Now, sitting down to do meditation actually is a good thing in a way that you can watch yourself. Say, supposing you sit down, After 5 minutes, what happens? You cross a leg after 5 minutes, you feel like getting up. You feel like not doing your meditation. Isn't it? Then that teach you one lesson, that you are impatient. So you should allow yourself a bit more energy and say, okay, I'm going to sit for another 5 more minutes. And so on. You keep on doing. And then you can also spend time doing more work in your own surrounding, your house, your room, and all this thing, tidy up everything. Right? And then when you are doing all these things, you can see your moods, you know, good mood, bad mood, and all these things. And that itself is what we call the practice. What do you do? What happens when you are in a bad mood? What happens when you are in a good mood? That you study yourself, understand yourself a lot better. And during this time when you cannot go out, that is the one of the good ways of being able to practice. So it's up to you. You see, when you go, when you can't go out, do you feel unhappy or not? Look at your unhappiness. And why do you want to go out? It's not that you should stay at home all the time. But the reason, the thing is, when you cannot go out, you get upset. So this is the thing. Go and see how you get upset. That means you are studying your own self. And when you cannot go out when you're in your own house, then you are with your own self. Okay.
I guess the case is probably similar to the previous case where because we are so used to like going out, like suddenly just cut down not going out is quite of a very sudden and drastic change, which we probably are not used to, but we have to do it no matter what because it's like restrictions.
So, it's just like, just now what you told me, you get addicted to junk food, isn't it?
Yeah.
So now it's like addicted
to going out.
See that?
Yeah.
So you can see when I don't go out, how do I feel? Right? The anxiety, the thing, I feel upset and all this. And when you feel the anxiety, when you feel the upset, you look at how much you suffer. You want to suffer or not? So you have a choice. You want to keep on suffering, you go and get upset with it. But then you can learn, okay, I get along with it. I cannot go out. So what I do is, with my time, I'll tidy my environment a lot better. I study some more, right? Instead of studying twice, you study 5 times. Right? And then if you are Buddhist, instead of not sitting for meditation, you say, okay, I'm going to sit, meditate for 5 minutes every hour. So these are the way you can use and change your time, your schedule, right? So it's up to you to want to make the change or not. Ellen, you see this one?
Yeah, it's up to us. Let's do this.
So you change. You are still the same person. You still got the energy. But you are channeling your energy into something more beneficial. Right? So, and when you make it a habit, you find that, number one, your life will be more regulated, better life. And then you will do better in your studies. Right? And then you will also have a change in your mindset. Okay.
Yep, that definitely makes sense.